Would you grab your Bibles, please? We're continuing on in 2 Corinthians. We're going to 2 Corinthians 4. And I'm going to start by praying. You can continue looking for the book while I pray. 2 Corinthians 4, but let's pray. Lord, give us eyes to see you. Give us ears to hear you. Give us hands and feet that are ready to respond. And give us hearts that are ready to receive you. We want to hear from you in your word this morning, and we want it to touch down in our lives in the ways that you want. So we lay our agendas before you and ask that you give us yours. In your name, amen. Last week, when we were in our passage, we started talking about how people share their faith and exactly what it is that happens in this sort of dynamic as people who do not currently know Jesus experience what at least our text refers to as sort of spiritual blindness. You might just think of it as sort of, we're not really particularly interested in this whole Jesus or God thing, but our text would actually say that that's a type of blindness or dullness or hard-heartedness, but that in spite of that, God somehow shines through that and brings Jesus to life in people that don't currently know him. And that's absolutely incredible. And you know how he does it in the passage? He does it as people who don't believe in Jesus simply encounter and rub shoulders and have life alongside another life and see Jesus in action in these people. And I shared a story with you about a woman whose New Year's resolution was that she was deciding that she was going to start admitting and calling herself a Christian in public, because for the longest time she'd been playing the game really carefully about what to share and what not to share, and always sort of hiding back, holding things back and hiding a little bit and not really revealing that actually the center of my very life is this person called Jesus, and it changes absolutely everything about it. And so her New Year's resolution was, I'm actually going to be the same person Sunday as I am on Monday, and vice versa, right? That it becomes this integrated and whole person. And that as a result of being this whole person, this holistic person, the same person on Sunday and on Monday, the Monday people start to notice that there's something going on inside, and God's light shines into other people's lives because of that. So as people start to share the life that they have with Jesus with other people, it starts to change them. But the question is, what of your life are you willing to share with people? Just certain parts? Only the good stuff? Only your Sunday morning face? Or is it going to be the whole person? Paradoxically, in our passage, Paul says that the things that we would normally hold back, all of the ugly parts and the weak parts and the parts that just aren't very cool or are still in early formation, and they don't look that great, that's the stuff that Paul suggests we should actually be sharing with these individuals. That's strange. That's bad marketing, isn't it?
That's the hope of the gospel.
You should share all of the things that aren't very cool about your life.
Meet him in you.
That's bad marketing, isn't it? It doesn't make sense. But somehow, that is the stuff that God is actually going to use. God is really bad at advertising, and it seems to work, as our passage is going to show us. So please follow along with me. I'm going to back up to verse 5 of chapter 4. For we preach not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, and ourselves as servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, made his light to shine in our hearts, to give us the light of the knowledge of the glory of God displayed in the face of Christ. But we have this treasure in clay jars to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. We are hard-pressed on every side, but not crushed. We are perplexed, but we're not in despair. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We are struck down, but we are not destroyed. We are always carrying around in our body the death of Jesus so that the life of Jesus may be revealed in our body. For we who are alive are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that his life may be revealed in our mortal body. So then death is at work in us, but life is at work in you. The main part of this passage is what you see on the screen, verse 7. This talk about clay jars and the extraordinary power. So first of all, let's define what's the treasure. We have this treasure in clay jars. What's the treasure? Look at verse 6. Verse 6 shows you the treasure in the clay jar is Jesus. God has shone in our hearts the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. It's simply a way of saying you now have Jesus in the very center of your life. That's what the heart is, the absolute center of your life. Heart mediates between mind and emotions, but it is the seat of the will. You have Jesus now sitting at the very center of what it is that defines who you are. That's the treasure. Jesus at the center. That's the treasure. What's the clay pot? You know what the clay pot is. You're the clay pot. I'm the clay pot. It's a weak individual. And the power, well, we will get to the power. Now, there's a problem. There's constantly a problem between Paul and the Corinthians. One of the issues between Paul and the Corinthians is that they have very different standards about what success looks like. They have very different assumptions about what their spiritual leader should actually look like. They have assumptions involving, they think that their spiritual leader should be the best possible preacher, the most articulate and persuasive and rhetorical and just amazing. You know, I'm fumbling here because I am not actually that person, but they think that they want their preacher to be the best preacher possible. They want him to be eloquent, because they prize that extremely highly in their culture. They want him to be eloquent. They want him to be well off. They want him to wear the right robe, right? The right sort of professorial sort of look for the 30-something hipster, something like that. They want him to look a certain way. They want him to be well off. They don't want him to have dirt under his nails. And the fact is that Paul's a tradesman. He works with his hands. And that does not particularly impress them at all. He doesn't look like a great spiritual leader to them. And he keeps sending them the wrong messaging because he doesn't have the right brands and the right lingo. He's not trending or on point, right? And they have adopted their culture's values. Paul, you're not displaying the life that we want. You look like a clay pot. Not very impressive. And that's not spiritual enough for us. You look far too weak. When you picture a spiritual leader, your spiritual heroes, your giants, the people that you look up to, that you want to be like, do they look like a clay pot? Or do we have a different standard that we adopted from our culture? Do our spiritual examples look ordinary and humble and weak? So they're asking Paul, why are you so weak? And verse 7 is his answer. We have this treasure. Now, this is the way that I memorized this verse. It's the way that's in the NIV, so it's probably the way that a lot of you have memorized it. We have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. The trouble there is that in Greek, to show is not there. That's an interpretive decision that the translators make. And if you take it out, the verse makes a slightly different point. It's not huge, but it's slightly different. If you have to show, the point of the pot is that the pot is there as an object lesson. Right? If you take out to show, then we have this treasure in jars of clay in order that this power might be from God and not from us. The point, if you take out to show, is that there is no power without weakness. It's a slightly different point. We have this power so that, we are jars of clay, we are weak, so that the power might be from God. In other words, it's possible, this is Ben giving you an interpretive decision, okay? I just want to be clear about that. So if you continue to use your NIV, go for it, okay? This is Ben's interpretation of this verse. If you take out to show, then it means that the weakness is the prerequisite for the power. We have these weak vessels. We are weak, and we have it there in order that the power might then show up. In other words, power comes only with the prerequisite of weakness. There's no power for those available for those who are not weak. Just like singleness is the prerequisite for marriage. And those who are already married cannot get married again because you don't need to be, right? Power, the prerequisite for power is weakness. And the emphasis in this verse is on God's power. The emphasis in this verse is not on what we bring to the equation. Can I just pause for a moment and say that's really good news for all of us? It's not on what you brought with you today that makes you a candidate for God to be at work in your life. It's not about honing your skills. It's not about you memorizing all of the books of the Bible in order and being able to spell them, as I was made to do in Bible college. It's not about the credentials that you bring. It's not about having all of the answers. It's not. That is not holiness. And you need to hear that, lest you continue, you and I, continue to try harder and harder and harder and harder to make ourselves better before God so that he will finally accept us. It's about weakness. God's power is there for those who need it, and it's not there for those who don't. This is actually about receiving something that we need. And only when we recognize that we need it. So this weakness is what Paul shares. Did you hear that? This weakness that he has is what he is willing to share with others when he talks to them about Jesus. Paul is willing to share all of his life, the parts that are still in process, the parts that don't look very good, the parts that are weak. Paul is willing to share that. Look at verse 8. You want to see that I am a clay jar? Here it is, people. In everything, we are being afflicted, but we're not being crushed. We're being perplexed, but we're not despairing. We're being persecuted, but we're not being abandoned. We're being knocked down, but we're not being destroyed. We are always carrying the death of Jesus in the body. Have you ever been perplexed? Can you relate to this at some level? Like, Paul's got bigger problems than most of us, but you can relate to this at some level. Have you ever been perplexed by what is going on in the world and where is God? Have you ever been perplexed by that? By the fact that I don't understand this? Have you ever been weighed down by doing the right thing and then it not working out that well? Like, what the heck? It was supposed to pay off for me. Hello? I did the right thing, God. Why hasn't it paid off the way that I wanted it to? Yeah. Have you ever been mocked because you did the right thing? because you were actually a Christian in public and it cost you something. Yep, Paul can relate. Paul faced troubles everywhere. He makes constant sacrifices for his churches. In fact, at one point, Paul will actually say that every time I go to a new city, the Spirit seems to be letting me know that things are not going to work out well for me. Like, that's the level at which he lives his life. That's like that sucks, right? Paul's going towards Red Deer, and the Spirit's like, FYI, this is not going to work out well for you. Go anyway. That's Paul's life. And he's making sacrifices constantly for people. And you know why? Because that's what Jesus did. Paul in this passage is demonstrating exactly what it is that Jesus goes through all the time. So this message that Jesus said of take up your cross and follow me, that message sunk in early for Paul. He realized at some point that his life was not actually his. Is your life still yours? Is my life still mine? Who is calling the shots? Sometimes I think we might answer that, well, my life is not mine. I'm actually living for other people. And what we mean is we're living for our spouse or our kids. And we say, well, we're not living for ourselves. Little sort of spiritual, psychological insight here for you. Very often, people who are living for kids and spouse are still living for themselves. Because we have attached our desires and expectations for particular outcomes for these people, and ultimately, we are still the ones setting the agenda. Have we actually died to ourselves? Who has set the agenda? Jesus will actually say, anyone does not hate his mother, brother, children, etc., isn't worthy of me, is not yet following me. We don't just die to ourselves, friends. We die to the whole of life. And all of our particular desires and expectations for that life, be they for ourselves or for other people. And until we have set those agendas aside, we cannot yet say that we have died to ourselves and taken up our cross and followed Jesus. Because Jesus said, I will die to everything until I am only living for what is most important to God. So family can still be an idol, and it can be somewhat deceiving if we say, yeah, I live for other people. Are you? Am I? Like, I'm preaching to myself here. So, back to Paul. Take up your cross sunk in early. And he recognized that his life was not his. And so he is afflicted and perplexed and persecuted and struck down. And he's living a life that very much looks like Jesus, the way that Jesus was treated. And we should be reminding ourselves, if this is the way that Jesus was treated, then we should probably expect the same types of things. And I'll come back to that in a little bit. But here's the other thing that Paul expects and that we should also expect. If we're living the life that Jesus lived, then we should expect the same results. And that means not only that we will be afflicted and crushed and persecuted and all that, but also the flip side, the other part of the verse where Paul says, but we're not crushed, but we're not despairing, but we're not yet abandoned. When you are entering into the life that Jesus offers us, you get the life that Jesus got, which also means the power that sustained him through those things. Not crushed, not despairing. You know, the places where you are afflicted and persecuted will not be the end for you. Because God's power shows up in the places where we are most weak. Paul sort of reminds me of one of those, you know, those punching bag, like inflatable clown. It's usually a clown, right? It's got a weight on the bottom. You blow it up and then you hit it and it goes down and then it comes back up. It's sort of like the life that Paul seems to be living, but Paul doesn't take any credit for getting lifted back up. He is giving the credit to God. He said, we're clay jars. We're weak. We don't have it in us. It has something to do with the treasure, not the jar. All credit goes to God. As you look back on your life, Are there places in your life where you would look back and go, I can't believe that I made it this far? I can't believe I'm actually still here. I can't believe that that worked out the way that it did. Take some time to think about how that very statement is pointing away from ourselves toward where God's power has been carrying you through. So I really want to encourage you. You are still here. And that is awesome. I mean, you're here and you're not paying attention to me, right? You're paying attention to, here is what Jesus is saying to us through his scriptures. And I want it to make a difference in my life. Like, I recognize that the attention that I'm getting right now isn't really attention on me, right? You are still here. And you are still here, and it's not because you are wise, and it's not because you are skillful, it's not because you necessarily had the right answers when the atheist objected or something like that. It's not, you are still here, and it's not because you have decided to just, I'm going to rise above everybody else's opinion and the way that they treat me and so on. That's not why you're still here. You are not still here because of anything you brought to the equation. You are not still here because you knew what to do all of the time. You are here because you haven't been enough, but God has been enough. Let me say that again. You are still here because you, not because you haven't been enough, or not because you have been enough, but because God has been enough. Now, get ready for Q&A. It's coming soon. Get your questions ready. Verse 10, we're always carrying the death of Jesus in the body in order that the life of Jesus might be revealed in the body. For we who are living are always being handed over to death because of Jesus, in order that the life of Jesus might be revealed in our mortal bodies. Therefore, death is working in us, but life in you. Again, this is simply another way of talking about taking up your cross. He's talking about the fact that if we are dying to ourselves, then we are taking up the life that Jesus had. But it does mean surrendering to death. It does mean giving it up. And that means letting go of our preferences and the outcomes that we want and the desires that we have, our goals. What are your goals for 2020? Are they your goals or are they God's? And are you willing to lay that down? But he says, we carry around the death of Jesus in order that we might get the life of Jesus. Jesus gets life. And you know how he gets it? Jesus gets life by dying. You don't get the resurrection life without the death. So is your life, is my life, is it still yours? Is it still ours? Or are we taking up our crosses? You know, when I kept reading this passage this week and wanting it to say something different. And usually by Wednesday, I've got enough of a sense that I can put in our, we have a computer program that coordinates with our worship leaders. And so they have a rough idea of the passage and maybe a theme or something. And I put perseverance in there. And as I was going a little further along, I realized this isn't about perseverance. And I kept wanting this, the message to be about perseverance, about you can do it, people. Just try a little harder. And it's not. In fact, it's the exact opposite, which is really frustrating. I had to delete perseverance. And thankfully, Megan didn't ever see my mistake and pick some great songs. This is not about perseverance. This is not about you praying harder and asking God to send strength, as though God sends little packages in the mail to you and they arrive and you open them up and you get what you need. It's not something from outside. The message here in this text is that there is Christ's life inside and it is working its way out. And it works its way out through all of the cracks in the clay jar. That's different than something coming from outside. You already have the power, and it's inside, and it only comes out through the cracks. You have become a container for Jesus' life. And that life seeps out through all the places you are most weak. And it's that that Paul shares with his unbelieving friends. Paradoxically, it's that, the power leaking through the cracks in the jar, that makes it possible for people to go, this Christian thing is actually about something more than what I thought. That's what Paul's sharing. He's not advertising Jesus. He's showing how Jesus has shown up in his life. Now, is there anything that you'd like to comment on, question? What does this raise for you? I would love to go down there and take a drink and let you think for a second. But what is it that you want to talk about? What does this raise for you? I love your question. Susanna asked, how do you identify the difference between your goals and God's goals? My suspicion is that you will only see it based on how attached you are to a particular outcome. Because that'll reveal whether it's what you actually wanted or whether it's what God actually had intended and is working towards. That's tricky. You have asked a profoundly difficult question, and I don't pretend to have answered it all. But I mean, that's part of the family thing I was talking about, right? That good things can still become idols. And so I have to find ways of identifying how I have bonded inappropriately with good things in my life, and they have actually taken a higher place in my life than God himself has. So it's very difficult. Thanks for raising it. Good question. What else would you like to ask or comment on, Maridel? Yes. Can't our goals be God's goals? Yes, absolutely. They should be. Question is, where did they come from? And so are they our goals because we recognize that this is actually God's priority and therefore it has become mine? And I will not take too much control of that, or they simply things that I have decided and I now ask God to bless. And I see some nods like, yeah, I've kind of been there because there have been some times where I have chosen good things and then I have then asked God to bless them. And then I have given them sort of an unholy, I've given them a new status. I've now said they're actually God's goals. And I just want to problematize that a little bit for us and say, you know, how much are these good things actually still idols in our lives? You know, how attached am I to that particular outcome? If it all goes sideways, now, does that mean that God abandoned? Or was that because I had actually received that in the wrong way? No, good question. I don't pretend to have answered it completely, but I would like to highlight a problem for us, that some of the good things in our lives do become idols. Yep. Thanks. Other things you want to ask, point out? Joel.
You're absolutely right. So Joel's been reading ahead in 2 Corinthians, and he's noticed that the theme that we are highlighting here in chapter 4 is actually just the thin edge of the wedge, and it's going to carry through most of the rest of this book. He's going to pick it up and more through the coming chapters. He'll drop it in chapter 8 and 9, but he's coming back to it in chapter 12. And so Joel is highlighting the passage in chapter 12 where Paul will talk about the thorn in his flesh, that God, there are some things going on in my life that I have asked God to deal with, and they're not particularly happy or pleasant things. And when I asked God to deal with them, he said, no. No. And then I asked again, and he said, no. And then he made it even more clear, no, and what I've given you will be enough. My power is now made perfect in your weakness. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Good job reading ahead. We should all be reading ahead, reading in context, right?
Well done. Yep. What does this look like in our lives? I don't have like one or two points of application. I have like 10, and today you're getting them all. Here you go. Because this is really challenging, right? Conceptually, this is not new, right? You've been in church world a little while. You've heard about, my power is made perfect in weakness, okay? What does that actually look like? Like, let's talk a little bit more about just a whole bunch of different places where this passage has to touch down in our lives. Starting back where I began, your vision of spiritual leadership. Be careful what your expectations of spiritual leadership look like. Corinthians adopted theirs from their culture. What we expect our spiritual leaders to look like will form and reinforce our expectations of ourselves, and that will also determine what aspects of our life we will and won't share with other people. Because these are the good parts where I am experiencing victory and success and so on, and these are the difficult parts that I will choose to hide and I won't share. Well, the power is made perfect in the weakness. The power leaks through the cracks in the clay pot. So maybe we need to be expecting that spiritual leaders are going to be humble and experience weakness and be willing to share that. No. Same goes for the people in the pews. Next, there is a lack of emphasis on what we bring. This is not, your spiritual life is not about honing your skills or increasing your credentials. You and I will always be inadequate for the task. So to speak personally here, every Sunday morning I wake up with dread. And it's not because of public speaking. It's because there is a deep feeling of inadequacy for this task. What are the tasks that you feel inadequate for? Maybe you need to recognize that you are not the sum total of the equation and that we are relying on God's power. Next point. Discipleship looks like Christ's life. And that means that we do need to expect that life will not always be easy, and we should not sell the Christian life as though it will make it easier for everyone. We need to expect that there is going to be suffering and disappointment and confusion, and we need to teach our kids that and our new believing friends that it will also be challenging. And we need to teach them how to learn to live with suffering. We need to learn to live with unmet desires and limitations and frustrations and disappointment with God when he says no to your requests that God take the thorn away. Thank you, Joel. At the same time, we need to be relying on Jesus' life in the middle of all of those disappointments and frustrations. And we also need to be teaching one another and reminding one another that we need to be expecting God's power to show up in those places of weakness. This isn't just stiff upper lip kind of thing. You know, just suck it up, buttercup. Life is going to be hard. But no, that you need to be expecting that Jesus is going to show up in the midst of those things and that the power will leak through the cracks in the clay jar. Next. This is about giving up some control. Taking up your cross means giving up control. And it's a paradox, right? Take up your cross means participating in a process that you don't control. You're not controlling your death. And you're not controlling how God gives you the life back. At the same time, it's not entirely passive, right? It's take up your cross. There's still some active, there's an active part of that as well. Take up your cross and die to yourself. This is a paradox, right? But it does mean that we have to give up our agendas. And that we have, there's sort of a willing passivity in this. It means that we participate in God bringing life to us in actions that we don't control. Example, Paul says, be filled with the Spirit. How do you control that? It's a paradoxical command. Be passive, but make sure you're filled with the Spirit. Get filled. How do you do that? You can't fill yourself with the Spirit. Bear fruit. It's like me telling you to be taller. How do you do this? There is some level of our own participation in something that is ultimately outside of our control. Take up your cross. It's not about us, but we participate in the process. For those of you who are feeling like battered clay jars, please don't forget that the entire passage is we have this treasure in clay jars. We are perplexed. We are dying. We are getting God's life. You are not alone. Choose not to be alone as you are a battered clay jar. If you are feeling battered, please share it with the other jars. Often, people do not see God at work in their own lives. And I know this because I talk to you one-on-one. And I know this because some of you have pointed it out to me in my life as well. So I'm speaking from experience here. Most people cannot see God at work in their own lives, and they need someone else to point it out, which means two things. If you're a battered clay jar, you need to be open with people. And for those of you who are sitting across the coffee table from them, it means that you need to be encouraging and to point out the places where God has been at work in your brother's or sister's life. But people are often not encouraging proactively. And so it is going to mean opening up. Open up. Let me remind you of what I said earlier as well. You are here today not because you are enough, but because God is enough. You are the clay, but there is treasure inside. Do you know what you have access to? What's leaking out? What should be leaking out? You have the death and resurrection, healing, life-giving power of Jesus inside you. But you got to let it leak through the cracks. But it's there. Last point. Stop selling and stop arguing for Jesus. Instead, share your life. The whole thing. What is more convincing to people than seeing God work through and in weaknesses? When someone actually gets an inside look at the raw stuff and the painful stuff in your life, and you're sitting across that table from them in Starbucks, and they say to you, after you shared what's actually going on in your life, and they say to you, I don't know how you do it. There's your opportunity to say, I can't take the credit. I can't take the credit. And see where that conversation goes. Because that's what Paul was doing. He shared the cracks. I'm going to offer you a moment for reflection, and I'm going to come back up for congregational prayer.